Hello, that's Sarah.
And that's Emily.
And this is
Lightweight True Crime. Emily, what are we drinking?
Well, our bartender Ryan tonight made us these cocktails that are like some kind of old-fashioned.
Like bourbon.
There's bourbon, there's lemon.
Maple syrup. They're delectable.
They're very good.
Thank you, Ryan.
Very sweet. I love it.
Delicious. So like we said, this is Lightweight True Crime. We're the lightweights bringing you the true crime.
Exactly.
Precisely.
And we've already had about a third of a drink.
We've been pre-gaming a scotch.
So we pre-gamed. So yeah. This will be fun.
You're welcome. Loyal listeners.
Loyal.
And by that we mean the no seven one. Friends we have made listen to this podcast.
And my mom, who probably does not enjoy this.
Oh, the things moms do. Man. Well, I went first last time.
Yeah. So I'll go first this time. Your turn.
Tell me a story.
All right. So this doesn't really have a name, but I like to call it the Savage Murders.
Ooh.
You'll see why. And it's not because people were brutally murdered.
Oh, okay. All right.
So all of this takes place in a little town called Tustin, California. Where,
been there.
Yeah. Ryan and myself grew up,
but we never met
until we moved to the beautiful city of La Mirada,
the metropolitan capital of California,
the warehouse capital of California,
the dirty strip mall capital of California.
Okay. So the house that this takes place in is literally 10 minutes from my parents' house by walking.
Your parents' house now?
No, the one that we grew up in.
Ugh.
So it's like literally less than a mile away. My brother had a friend who lived right down the street.
Okay, this is so funny because I have a childhood connection to my story
today too.
Oh my gosh. Look at us. So podcast married.
So Easter Sunday of 2018. So it is March 25th. 2018. There's this woman, doesn't give us a name, but we know that her last name is Savage, hence Savage Murders.
Sure.
She goes to pick up her 87-year-old father from his house on the 1000 block of Hunt Ridge Avenue.
Okay.
And he lives there with two of his other children. So this woman who goes to pick them up, her other two siblings live there. Okay. Daniel, who is 51, and Jacqueline, who is 57. And as she goes inside, she finds her sister face down on the bedroom floor with blood on her mouth.
Oh my gosh.
And so her sister thinks, oh, she fell down and hit her head, but she's pretty sure she's dead. So she runs outside to call the police. And when the police show up, there's no sign of forced entry. And they find Jacqueline, and she has a bunch of bruises all over her face and her neck. And she has blood in her mouth.
Jacqueline's the sister that was face down?
Yes. Okay. Jacqueline is the sister who lives with her father and brother there. Okay. And then the police also find Daniel, who also lives there. And he's also face down on his bedroom floor. And he has what looks like blood all over his face, too. And so Jacqueline and Daniel live with their dad because he has Alzheimer's. Okay. And so they're there kind of as caretakers. But their house, somehow it's like separated where their dad, Richard, kind of has his own area of the house.
Yeah.
And so he had no idea that his children had been dead for 2 days.
Wait, I thought you said Jacqueline was alive.
No, the other sister.
Oh,
we don't know the name.
Okay. Gotcha.
We'll call her Megan.
Sure, Megan. I grew up in the same house with my grandparents, and our houses, like, we were in one house but had our separate areas, and we could have been dead for like 3 to 7 days, and if our grandparents didn't open the kitchen door, they wouldn't have known. I get that.
That's true. You also lived on a farm. This is suburb.
That's true. Good point, Emily.
Anyways.
Excellent. Keep going.
But also, he has Alzheimer's.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Anyways, Richard Savage lived in the house for 2 days while his children were dead, face down in their bedrooms.
I hate that.
So, for a couple days, police are like not sure what happened. They think there's foul play, but they're not sure because there's no stab wounds, no gunshot wounds or anything. And so they conduct an autopsy, and I already said neither of them had any kind of injuries of any kind. Sure. And so what the coroner realized is that what they thought was blood on Daniel's face was actually shoe polish. Okay. So he had a bunch of shoe polish smeared all over his face.
Okay.
And he had consumed some as well.
Oh.
And so at first they're like, oh, well, he just drank a bunch of shoe polish and killed himself.
Okay. But, weird way to go.
Yep. But the coroner does some lab testy things and realizes that it's not enough shoe polish to kill. And basically no shoe polish that you can buy is toxic enough to kill.
Just some recreational shoe polish. Digestion.
But he had also swallowed 3 bullets.
Oh my goodness. Didn't see that one coming.
Yep. So Daniel had shoe polish on his face and bullets in his throat.
Ugh.
And the coroner determines that he has died of a stroke.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm not a doctor. I don't know if bullets and shoe polish can induce a stroke.
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Yeah.
I am also a doctor, so I'm going to say no.
Yeah. Also, he's 51. Yeah. The chances of a 51-year-old having a stroke are pretty slim if they don't have any other pre-existing medical conditions, I've been told. And the coroner determines that Jacqueline died of heart disease.
Okay.
So I did not find anywhere that said that she had a history of heart disease. She was 57, so she was a little bit older.
And what are the chances that the brother dies of stroke and the sister dies of heart disease on the same time?
Same day.
In the same house.
Both end up face down in their bedrooms.
Right.
So, that's it.
Stop it. That is not the end of that story.
That is the end of the story.
Is it for real?
Yep. They never investigated any further. The coroner was like, yep, that's it. Done. I'm done. I'm out. And Tustin police were like, cool, yeah, that sounds great.
This is in the year of our Lord, 2018?
No, 2008.
Oh, 2008, still.
Still.
Have they never seen an episode of Forensic Files?
Probably not.
Or Law and Order?
Probably not.
That's never how this goes.
Right.
Who was collecting their life insurance?
I don't know. There's, like, not a ton of information out there. I even tried to, like, get their medical records or their death certificate. Couldn't figure it out.
No, there's something very bad going on there.
So their father ended up living 4 more years and died in 2012. I don't know what happened to our dear friend Megan.
That is terrible.
Yeah. Real quick, real short, and gonna stick with you for a while.
Okay, we need to pause real quick because I'm gonna sneeze.
Oh my God, I was about to sneeze last time.
Okay, perfect. So, Rye, can you pause?
No.
Seriously?
We're just going to let it happen.
Oh.
We can edit things out afterwards.
Okay, I'm allergic to Ryan and Emily's cat, so.
You're allergic to Ryan
hold.
And Emily.
I am allergic to you.
I'll just tell some stories.
Just tell more about the cocktail.
So, this cocktail we got out of a book.
Hi, guys. My name is Ryan.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm married to you. We've been married for more than 1 year. And it's been above average.
Rude.
What? More than 1 year?
Married. We have been married for 3 years, and it has been fantastic.
I have known them for longer than they've been married, and they're both.
You've known us for
excellent.
Longer than we were even dating.
I didn't meet Ryan. You until you. Until you guys started dating.
Yeah.
But I'm very glad you came with my friendship to Ryan. So you were an add-on.
And we'll edit all of it.
I remember... You can edit this out too. I remember Ryan and I had very first started dating, maybe like a couple months. And I like knew of you.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that you were like Ryan's feminist friend. And
I am
he
known
was
by
like,
that.
I told Sarah about something that you said. And she was like, ooh, I like her. We'll be friends. And I was like, yes.
I remember him telling me that you were a feminist. I remember.
That's probably what he told you. And here we are.
And here we are.
Drinking cocktails, spilling.
Talking
crime.
About true crime. Well, I'm very impressed with how our stories are similar in that they're short and weird. And from our, and from like, we have hometown connections to them.
Yeah.
Tell
me about yours.
Yeah. So it's funny. I titled this document on my computer, Lightweight Story Number 1. Even though it's not the first story I've done for this
That's
show.
That's funny.
I'm a seasoned podcaster now.
Yes, yes, yes.
So.
Oh, my ice has melted.
Oh, I'm sorry. Second drink, like Pam says in the office.
I'm sorry if you have misophonia. You're welcome if you have ASMR likings.
If that's your jam. Okay, so the story I'm going to tell you is from, begins in September of 1968, when a man named Douglas Grenstead, who was a husband and a father of two girls, Beth and Lynn, who are ages 13 and 11, leaves to go on a hunting trip in the Lake Tahoe area. I remember when he came to say goodbye, Beth, his daughter, recalls. And then he left, and he was supposed to be back in a couple of weeks. This was not unusual. Douglas regularly went on hunting trips, but a couple of weeks came and went, and he didn't return home. 1968, pre-cell phones, right? So yeah. maybe there's a day, you know, give or take on either end of that two-week estimate, but...
Maybe he had a great... lots of hunting.
Maybe he was very successful in his hunting. But then, like, enough time passes that his family grows concerned.
No amount of animals are
right. Worth this is a husband and a father. He's not going to like be gone for longer than he said. So authorities use everything at their disposal to look for him. Search and rescue teams use dogs, helicopters, volunteers from the local community, and even local prisoners to search the wilderness.
Whoa!
He was thought to have been hunting in, right? Because it's not like, oh, I'm going to Tuscaloosa on business. It's like, I'm going like hunting in the wilderness. So it's a little harder. But
also, what's Tuscaloosa?
It's a town in Oklahoma, right?
I don't know. Are you thinking of Tulsa?
Tuscaloosa. I'm going to Google it right now. Tuscaloosa.
Because they sound
City
very
of
similar.
Tuscaloosa. Oh, I'm sorry. It's in Alabama. Case closed. West Central Alabama. Anyway, so
it sounds like he was in Tuscaloosa.
No. So all I'm saying is that
he didn't go to LA for work.
Right. He's camping. I'm sure that he didn't give his family like the exact coordinates of where he was going. So there's a lot of like land to search. Right. There were people from our church. There were people from the community that didn't even know us that went up to search for him. Daughter Lynn has said. So ads run in the newspaper. They offer a reward for anyone who finds him. Local news outlets continue to keep the story alive as the search continues. And eventually, a team of searchers found what they thought was his campsite, which had several hunting tags, his sleeping bag, and even his car. But there were no signs of Douglas. Any time that somebody came by, we'd run into the living room to see if it was him. We'd stand up on the baseboard heaters and look out the window to see if he was coming back, his daughter Beth said. So the searches eventually stop because they don't find anything outside of like his camping spot. And it's assumed that he died in an accident in the wilderness. And after 7 years, he's declared legally dead. There was compelling evidence that he was indeed dead, and it was tough on us, daughter Lynn is quoted as saying. So when Douglas initially goes missing, it's 1968, and Barbara, his wife, is left as a single mother to provide for her two daughters, right? This is like pre the era of the celebrated single mom.
Yeah, she's not allowed to work.
She is a woman.
She's too fragile.
She's too fragile. She might break.
Not too fragile that she can't raise children.
Honestly.
Which, let's be honest, is hard work.
Very hard work. The hardest work, some might say. So it isn't until he's declared legally dead 7 years later after his disappearance that the girls and their mom receive Douglas's Social Security survivor benefits.
Oh my gosh.
Right? So,
was there a reason why they weren't able to declare him dead earlier?
I think you have to be missing for something, at least in the 60s.
They were eager to let's declare him dead.
Yeah. But it's also like, how are you going to provide for these kids? So it's not until 7 years later, right? So if their daughters were 13 and 11, they were basically grown by the time they even get this money. So the girls were still minors when they were granted this money. And so they didn't use that money until they went to college. But Beth received roughly $10,000 and Lynn received about $12,000.
Dang, favorite child.
I'm trying to think. I don't know if that has something to do with age of like when, how old they were, like when the dad died. I don't know. Oh. I should have done better research.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if there's something about accruing or interest.
Well, no, I think it has to do with, I don't know. I shouldn't talk about things I don't know about.
Anyways, money.
So Barbara, their mom, and Douglas's widow, who was a stay-at-home mom, used the $80,000 she received to raise and support her daughters, right? So fast forward to 2016. Beth and Lynn, Douglas's daughters, are in their 60s, and Barbara, his widow, is nearing 90. When they each receive a letter from the Social Security Administration stating that they want all of that money back.
Excuse me?
Claiming it had been a overpayment. So why? What is happening here? It's been
years.
Decades and decades, right? Why would they get this letter? Well, let me tell you. A year earlier, a man
in 2015?
Correct.
Okay.
Good job. A man in Flagstaff, Arizona, wrote to the Social Security office because he was dying of pneumonia, and he wrote them claiming to be Douglas Grinstead.
What?
The letter reads, "My current name is Richard Morley, an identity I assumed. I was born Douglas Grinstead. My legal name and identity is Douglas Grinstead. I do not have a birth certificate under Richard Morley." Spoiler, Douglas Grinstead did not die in an accident on a hunting trip in 1968.
What?
He had faked his own death in order to run off with his mistress. And in 47 years, never once reached out to someone from his former life. 47 years. And then the one person you think to reach out to is the Social Security office?
That is a special kind of psychopath.
So Douglas, you know, before he ran off, had been a funeral director. And he had taken on the identity of a dead man named Richard Morley and petitioned the Social Security Administration for a new Social Security number using that name. And it was approved. Don't know how that worked, but it did.
Me either.
So Douglas's own parents died thinking their son had perished in a tragic accident. Like, he left his wife, his two children, and his parents.
That mistress must have been super hot.
So he married her and had two kids with her and lived this life in Arizona.
With her?
Yes.
Forever.
I think it was with her. Yeah. At all this time, we thought my dad was a victim, that something happened to him, Lynn said. And we were just getting hit with the whole thing that he's been alive and that we were the victims. Because by the time they get this, the Social Security reaches out to them, he's already died of pneumonia.
Why? Sorry.
So there's very little known. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, why did you have to concoct this crazy thing? Like,
also then why did he reach out to Social Security office?
Like why not take that with you? Like, to the grave.
Right. Like, I would understand if he was like, you know what? I really want that $80,000 back.
Well, it's not like it would have gone to him.
That's true.
Like, these are government benefits.
The only reason, that's true.
So like,
he just wanted to hurt them.
Or, like, thought this was his weird way of getting it off his chest without suffering any of the consequences and having to actually, like, see his daughters and wife.
Dumb, because he's about to die.
It's crazy town. It's crazy town. So, the situation gets a scotch crazier.
How?
So, despite the circumstances surrounding the situation, the Social Security Administration is adamant about wanting their money back.
Oh my God.
Originally, Barbara, right? Douglas's first wife and Beth and Lynn's mother, she requests a waiver, right? When she gets this letter.
Yeah. She's citing, like, I'm almost 100.
I'm
please.
Almost 1,000 years old. Also, I am clearly a victim in this, right?
Yeah.
So she cites that, like, there's fraud surrounding her husband's death. She didn't know about this. And initially, a judge ruled that Barbara just needed to pay $10 a month for the rest of her life, and that after her passing, the remaining amount of more than $80,000 would be forgiven. If I were this judge, I would be like, girl, you've suffered enough. But that seems compassionate to me, right? She died 2 months after the decision, after this judgment was made, right? And after her death, the judge reversed his decision.
No.
Which puts the debt on the shoulders of the daughters. Who he's also saying, like, you owe $10,000 and you owe $12,000. So Beth and Lynn have filed waiver requests, which initially were approved. So at, like, the close of 2016, they got this, like, really good news that their waivers had been approved. They didn't owe all this money. only to be reversed. Dies. Their mom dies, and then the decision, the waivers were reversed early in, I think, 2017. And that legal battle, as far as my research, because I know Lynn.
What?
I went to school with her kids in Oregon.
What?
I don't know her like super well, but like I know who she is. And it was a small town, small school.
Is it Jace's mom?
It is Jace's mom.
I knew
it. Yeah, it is 100%.
She changed her name.
She did. But as far as I could tell, this legal battle is still going on because the Social Security Administration wants this money back.
That is insane.
And that is the story of the disappearance of Douglas Grinstead. Isn't that bananas?
That is nuts.
Like, these two girls have lost their mom. At least two women. I'm sorry. They're in their 60s. Yeah, yeah. Like, they could lose their houses. Like, they... It is insane, insane, that they were victimized, like, by their dad.
Yeah.
And now, from the grave, he is attempting to ruin their lives.
Like, oh, sorry. No, you're... Dad's not dead. He just didn't want to live with you anymore. And by the way, his dying breath was to ask for his money back.
And like, yeah. Like, honestly, Social Security Administration doesn't need that money.
No.
Donald Trump could cut two trips to Mar-a-Lago and we'd be good. Yeah. So that is Lynn's kids went to my same private school. And I remember my mom like sending me the stories, like the local news stories would, because like good for like the Portland, greater Portland area news, because they ran this story hard as good. Like, can you believe this is happening to these sweet people?
Yeah.
Like, they're the salt of the earth. They're like super good people. But yeah, I can't imagine like having to grieve that like your dad abandoned you and then has been alive this whole time that you thought he was dead and also just turned out not to have like died in an accident, but was a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the story of Douglas Grinstead. Whew.
All right.
We've been drinking.
We have.
And I've been drinking. I've been drinking. Anyway, sorry, Beyonce.
Now I have a fun question for you, and I really thought I would remember it. Okay. If there was a movie being made about your life, ooh, who would play you?
You know, I've thought about this.
You know, I have too.
Because my life is so exciting that I mm-hmm. think it's a distinct possibility that there's going to be a movie made about it.
Yeah.
I don't want this person, like, I don't have this person in mind because I think like, oh, we're doppelgangers, but just because I would be so tickled because I think she's a great actress and like funny and spunky, mm-hmm. but Emma Stone.
Oh yeah. That's a good one.
I think she's funny and quirky and smart and I would be honored.
I think she would play a great Sarah Schwartz.
Thank you. I hope so. What about you, Emily? Who would play you?
I think I would pick Anna Kendrick.
Oh my gosh. That is perfect.
Because I'm obsessed with her, and Ryan will tell you.
And, like, you do kind of look alike, and I feel like you have a similar energy.
It's, like, the greatest. I know. I feel like if we met, we'd be great friends. Uh-huh. We have the same kind of humor. Granted, I only know her acting humor, but...
It's got to be
the same.
I mean,
like, I follow her on Instagram, and her captions are funny.
Yeah.
But we'd get along well.
I love
and
that.
And I think... Because she's, like, sassy and has a mean sense of humor.
I love that.
Ryan, don't nod at the fact that I have a mean sense of humor.
Kudos to our executive producer,
yes,
Ryan.
He really puts in a lot of work here.
For listening to our stories, yes. For making us drinks.
Yep. Cheers.
Cheers.